This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Let's have a look at what we have been doing. Thursday, November the 12th. Well, what we've been doing is focusing on property. We've had numbers from Ema. We've had numbers from Aldar, speaking to the CFO of Aldar as well. Plus, we've been talking Bergonomics as well. Tom has been keeping a very close eye on investor relations at McDonald's and looking at the arrest and release of a prominent journalist in India. Plus, Serena Kelly's been in the room to make sure that we all behave ourselves.
Ask Serena.
With Fragoman, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
Although I have to say, Serena Kelly, the questions are rolling in thick and fast for you this morning. They are curly.
I
know that Tom is going to look forward to putting them to you. There is no shortage of them. They range from hospital recommendations to visa status inquiries to Christmas lunch recommendations.
Oh, wow. Okay, I've started calling around as well, actually.
Right, that's Tom's job. His job is to put you on the spot. Before we do that, however, give us the case numbers.
So this time last week, we were looking at figures of 1,161. Yesterday, they announced 1,214 new cases of COVID-19 in the country. That's after more than 114,600 tests were conducted. We currently have 4,637 being treated for the virus in the UAE. 520 fatalities now. That's after two deaths yesterday. 741 recoveries yesterday. And that now stands at a total recovery number of 140,442. Putting all of that together, overall tally of confirmed or reported cases in the UAE stands at 145,599. I know you were a hot topic really has been testing. It's always been a massive thing for the UAE, you know, testing, revealing those cases, getting them isolated. So just an interesting point. The UAE's conducted more than 14.4 million tests as a nation. Actually puts us 11th globally, but still number one when it comes to when you've got a population of more than a million as a nation. We are actually at top when it comes to testing there.
Right. Inspections as well. Inspections and travel.
So when it comes to inspections for COVID-19 safety violations, in Dubai, five shisha cafes and a laundry have been shut. The outlets were located in International City, Trade Centre 1 and Hor Al Ain's areas. Eight other establishments have been fined, including an electronic trading establishment in Dubai's Naif area, and 26 have been handed warnings. But Dubai Municipality, they inspected more than 2,300 establishments on Tuesday. When it comes to travel, bit of information for you. New protocols have been announced for UAE citizens and residents planning to perform the Umrah pilgrimage heading to Saudi Arabia. So according to the guidelines, applicants must meet the age criteria that's announced by the Saudi Ministry of Health. You need to have a negative COVID-19 PCR test. Just a reminder there, it can't be older than 72 hours. You've got to have your confirmed return flights. And also you need to book your reservation to perform Umrah. And there is a special app for that. It's called Itmana as well. Pilgrims also, you need to download the Tawak Alna app upon arrival in Saudi Arabia. And you also need to self-quarantine for 3 days.
Okay. All right. We've got a new study coming out of Abu Dhabi as well about COVID recovery.
That's right. So patients with COVID-19 will recover faster if they have had a healthy diet prior to falling ill.
So it's not just eating the oranges once you've got COVID?
Nope. You need to be healthy, eating well and healthy prior to that. So a study by the Department of Health Abu Dhabi examined the lifestyle of more than 1,000 patients aged between 18 and 69. And they found a statistically significant correlation between diet and length of stay in hospital to treat the symptoms of the virus. So the research showed that their immune system was stronger if they had been eating the right food. So those who followed a healthy diet had a shorter stay in hospital. It's simple as that.
There you go. Just another reason to get the veggies in. Right. Thomas, what do people need to know from Serena Kelly this morning?
All right, Kelly, you ready for this?
No.
Okay, fine.
No, go for it.
Let's just talk about fluffy things then.
Okay.
Let's not. Let's get on to some of the questions that are coming through for you. Okay, let's start from the bottom and work our way up. Hey, Serena, you are confusing me. Doesn't say that. It just says, Alan says, I'm very confused over the COVID-19. I'm on the DOH website. I type in exempt from quarantine. 5 arrivals from abroad who are volunteers of COVID-19 vaccination trial. But when I speak to a well-known airline here, they refer me to their own web link and say I do go into quarantine. I can't book. I won't book a flight if I have to go into a quarantine. Etihad could be losing bookings due to the information they are currently giving at the moment. Who's right? Again, mixed information for Alan. He's hearing one thing on the official website. He's hearing another from the airline website with regards to quarantining into Abu Dhabi.
So it's arriving into the capital because anyone actually entering Abu Dhabi, if you've been abroad, you definitely need to quarantine. So that's regardless, like that was the latest update. So that's coming in on a flight for into the capital, or perhaps even traveling, arriving in another emirate and from a flight and then heading into the capital.
So one of his points is COVID-19 vaccination volunteer.
So if you're part of the trial. So in that regard, we'd have to reach out to some of our contacts to
try.
The only thing that has been said for, and Richard could probably vouch for this because he participated in the phase 3 trials that were ongoing or have been ongoing here in the UAE. The one perk, so to speak, is that you don't need to take a PCR nasal swab test or DPI test going through to the capital. You're exempt from that. And you can actually take the emergency lane going through as
but
well.
But can you travel internationally or not? Because this is an airport question. No.
No, absolutely not. The one and only place it works is going into the capital, Abu Dhabi.
Okay. So there's no fast track out of the airport or anything like that?
I haven't tried, but I wouldn't fancy my chances of turning up in Dusseldorf and waving my Al Hossein app. I'm not sure they'd get it. I've got yellow star.
I've got the star. The star's on there. There's Rob. Rob's been in touch. Hey, Reens. Any idea what the status is for visa holders that have been out of the UAE for more than 6 months now?
So obviously everything kind of came back to normal in July. So you would need to reach out, depending on where your visa is from, if it's which emirate. That, for example, Dubai, it would be the GDRFA. Elsewhere, otherwise, it'd be also ICA. But you'd need to, because I know they actually announced a window that depending on when flights resumed between the country you're in and the UAE, then they kind of date it from there with regards to the grace period that you have to normalize your status again. So, but you'd need to speak to officials on that one because everybody's case is going to be different.
And we've probably got time to squeeze one more in for you. Morning, Serena. This is from Elizabeth. Elizabeth asks, can you please advise me which hospital a COVID patient would go to for a treatment? Does the health department advise when they confirm a positive result or does the patient get to choose?
I know the Dubai Health Authority, they're positive, they actually go through everything that needs to be done. So if you don't require medical treatment and you have accommodation where you can isolate and have your own like bathroom, everything separate, then that's something that is allowed. But of course, if you need medical treatment, you would need to be admitted to hospital. But I know that the Dubai Health Authority, they go through a whole list of information and speak to people that are diagnosed as positive, and they'll walk you through it, so to speak.
Right. Good to know. Thank you very much, Serena.
More details on the Air and New Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, Rich is interested in the local numbers, and we've had two property heavyweights come out in the last 24 hours. Emaar Properties here in Dubai and Alda down the road in Abu Dhabi. On the back of those fresh out the oven earnings from Alda, we are speaking now to the Chief Finance and Sustainability Officer, Greg Fewitt, joining us from the capital. Greg, good morning. Nice to speak to you.
Good morning, Brandy.
Do you want to just quickly describe to us, first off, what the last quarter has looked like for Alda? How has Q3 been for you?
Well, Q3 Q3 has been really an excellent quarter for Aldar. I mean, we're reporting a quarter of growth. We're reporting a quarter with revenues surging up 30% year on year. Gross profit is up 5%. Net income is also up 8% quarter on quarter. And that's a story reflecting a very strong and very busy business. We had a record quarter for development sales in Abu Dhabi here with Aldar at 1.2 billion dirhams during Q3 of 2020. It was our strongest quarter ever, and that really drove an increase in development management and development division profits. And along with the stable, diversified asset management portfolio, we're very happy with the performance that we delivered in Q3.
Now, Greg, people are going to be listening to that. They're going to be saying, look, there's a pandemic. Look, prices for houses are low at the moment. How are you having a record quarter?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, the first is that, you know, supply-demand in the Abu Dhabi real estate market is generally in balance. We also have a very healthy and a very liquid buyer base in Abu Dhabi who has been very active during the third quarter. Now, we've got a fair bit of inventory on our books. We haven't been launching projects yet this year owing to the pandemic. But those customers are liquid, they're sophisticated, and they're sniffing value in the real estate market, and they're putting money to work. And we've got a very diverse land bank and a very diverse range of inventory to show these investors, and they're transacting, and our numbers reflect that.
Well, let's look at it actually as year to date, rather than just one quarter. Let's take the first 9 months of this year, particularly looking actually at your profitability.
So, I mean, for the first 9 months, again, if there's a growth story in there, which is our gross profit line. I mean, we're up on a gross profit line. We're down slightly on net income, but you know, we took some impairments in Q2, reflecting the pandemic that was hitting. But really, it's about the trend, and the trend is positive. We're very excited, of course, during the quarter to be announcing a partnership with the government of Abu Dhabi, where we're going to be really growing up growing and ramping up our activity in our development management business. So with the growth that we've shown from our existing customer base and with the increase in the fees that we generate from our development management business, you know, ours is a story of growth and a story of activity here in Abu Dhabi.
So what kind of tough decisions, Greg, have you had to take to lead to these numbers, particularly when it comes to staffing?
Well, I mean, you know, we've got a large diversified business. A lot of it is exposed to consumer, which is sort of that's been at the sharp end of where the pandemic's hit. We own malls. We own hotels. Now, you know, we have stayed busy, though. I mean, we're very happy to be reporting that, you know, by the third quarter, footfall across our malls is up to where it was pre-pandemic. We're also very happy to be reporting that in our hospitality business, our strategy there has been really to, you know, commercialize on, you know, one of the strengths of Abu Dhabi, which has been managing the health file very, very carefully. And, you know, we were hosting our second UFC Fight Island on Yaz Island in the last quarter, which is great for business in the sense that, you know, for 6 weeks we devote our hotels exclusively to this international community. So we actually have pretty decent occupancies across our hotels, and we've kept staff and people busy commensurate with that activity that we have.
Have you had to let people go?
I mean, you know, like any company in this environment, you have to manage your costs well, but we're busy, Brandy. We're growing.
Have you had to let people go, though, Greg?
Well, we're busy, Brandy. We're growing. And our staff, I mean, our staff costs and our expense lines are flat year on year. And we need talent, we need support, and we're growing. And we're open for talent, and we're hiring right now.
Tell us, Greg, you mentioned the malls there, and you mentioned the footfall. What have you done to keep your partners afloat there? What kind of incentives, what kind of rent relief, what have you had to put in place?
Well, I mean, early in the pandemic, we came out, very early on with a broad package of support. So that was 190 million dirhams that we had announced to support tenants in our malls, to support parents in our schools, to support the technology for a lot of the families who, you know, we're with 22,000 students across across our school network. And we're almost, 90% deployed on that support program. But we're leaders here in our market. And we're very happy to have announced early on, our support and our vision on how to get through this pandemic. And it's really a partnership-oriented approach that we took with a lot of our partners.
Oh, what about your suppliers? Because this is always the big question when it comes to construction-based companies, isn't it? In terms of paying the bills, in terms of making sure that everyone all the way down the chain can stay afloat, what have you put in place there?
Well, on the supplier side, especially with our development business, again, being a master developer, being a prime developer, we take very seriously our role sitting at the top of that pyramid. And so, we have been paying. We have not been delaying our projects right through COVID. We're very happy that we've been, able to progress on all our projects and, importantly, pay our contractors on time and keep those supply chains fed. And that's a crucial role for leaders in the market to be playing to keep the industry moving. And that cash works all around. I mean, when we keep our projects moving, we're also very happy to have seen our customer base performing very well as well. We've collected over 3.1 billion dirhams year to date from our customers in our development management business as we've been handing over houses in our market and keeping the industry moving here.
All right, Greg, before we let you go, is there anything you can say about 2021? What is Aldar expecting looking forward?
Well, look, I think everyone's, keenly watching news and very excited about, vaccine developments and seeing an end to this pandemic. We're very happy to be closing 2020 really on a strong note, bringing a story of growth to the market here and demonstrating the Abu Dhabi real estate market as in balance from a supply-demand perspective, a great place for investors to put their money to work and to make a lot of money. And we're moving into 2021 with that strength and with the growth story in mind on the back of the partnership we've announced with the government and with a very healthy customer base and one of the best real estate markets in the world to show regional investors and global investors.
Greg Feuer, Chief Finance and Sustainability Officer at Aldar, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And it's that time of the morning when we have a look at what's happening everywhere else.
I've got a story from India, from Republic TV channel in India. The headline
There's
is...
There's a snort from our Indian producer to our left. Shruti?
Shruti, our Indian... Morning, Shruti.
Morning.
Shruti is here. When I said, I'm going to do this story, Shruti said...
No.
No.
Shruti, where did you go to university, just in case people are wondering about that accent?
Preston, that is the northwest of England.
Bizarrely, she went to university about 15 miles from where I was brought up. So we do have those flat vowels, don't we, though?
Yes.
But we disagreed on this. She said, no, you can't do it. And I said, yes, I can, at the start of Barack Obama. But I'm gonna tread carefully. Okay. Here's
separated at birth. Keep talking.
Here's the headline on Republic TV. Arnab Goswami returns to the newsroom. Team Republic roars, the game has just begun. I'll give you the context in a second. First of all, have a listen to this. This is the moment when the aforementioned Arnab Goswami is a prominent journalist in India, editor-in-chief of Republic TV and their main anchor newsperson, returned to the newsroom after being in jail for the past week and a bit. So,
why don't I get that welcome every morning?
Precisely, because you haven't been in jail for the past week and a half.
Don't speak too soon.
it could happen. So here's the context. Arnab Goswami is one of India's most prominent journalists. He was arrested on the 4th of November, a week and a bit ago, on charges we'll get to later. But his arrest was considered quite political. He is quite a right-wing journalist. He's considered to be allied to the BJP. That's the ruling party of the government, Narendra Modi. But he is quite outspoken on many, many issues. And as outspoken people, high-profile people often are, they have enemies as well as friends. We'll get to the charges in a second, but I just want to give you the context of just how big a deal Arnab Goswami is in India. I mean, Shruti, he is... The most high-profile journalist?
Yes, and it's you either love him or you hate him. And, most people will love to see him in jail for other reasons, but I feel in this case he is right.
He's kind of Marmite. Have a listen to this. I've been watching him on TV news for years now because, obviously, my wife's Indian. My mother and father-in-law spend a lot of time with us. My father-in-law's a big fan. And my kids take the mickey out of my father-in-law for watching it. They call it shouting news.
It is.
He used to have a TV show on the Times of India TV channel. He was so popular that he left to set up his own TV network, Republic TV, which has been a big success within his niche. People compare it to Fox News.
Yes.
It's of the right. It's fine. You like it, you don't like it, but it is what it is. And it's quite strident. Have a listen to this. This is shouting news. Arnab Goswami is the male gentleman, and this is kind of his broadcasting style.
Please ask Syeda Abida Hussain to first apologize to me and to the people of India for describing this as bunkum. Our points are not bunkum. Let her apologize, but and then you can speak over me.
I maintain that your
I also maintain that you spoke bunkum.
What you say about his bruises, etc., is absolute bunkum.
I repeat.
And he does repeat. And there are far more extreme examples than that. He kind of does it even before Zoom. You know, you're on a Zoom call and you got like four or five people on a call. He would always get about eight people on the call with different views on controversial issues, and they just shout at each other for about 2 hours. Yes. He's an ex-lawyer. I mean, he's quite a character, but a divisive figure. Anyway, here's the deal. He was arrested on November the 4th on charges related to the death of an architect who designed the Republic TV studios 2 years ago when he left Times of India and set up on his own. Now, the architect was found deceased in his house 2 years ago, 2018. There was no suggestion of foul play, but the architect left a note saying, "I am owed a lot of money by Arnab Goswami and his company. The pressure is getting to me and I blame him for this." And India has laws, we're not going to get into those, about this kind of death. He was questioned at the time, was released, and the charges resurfaced in early September. Have a listen to this guy. He's Shekhar Gupta. Do you know Shekhar Gupta?
Yes, of course.
He's a more balanced journalist,
I would say. And he works for NDTV, which is the more sort of balanced news. They will criticise both sides. So
He's more of a centrist. This is him summing up who Arnab Goswami is, so you understand the context of just quite what a Marmite figure he is.
Now, Arnab Goswami is a polarizing figure. He is very popular among some people. He is also very unpopular among others. I might think that his journalism is not journalism. It is something else in the name of journalism. But there will be many more of you who will think that he actually represents the shining light of Indian journalism. So I'm not getting into an argument on that.
So that's the balanced view. He is Marmite. He's maybe a kind of Sean Hannity type figure. Mm. Whatever. You like him or you don't. The point is, 2018, when these charges surfaced, and it's quite political. I mentioned earlier that he is to the right of politics in India. The right-wing party is in power at the moment. Narendra Modi is the Prime Minister, the BJP. He lives in Mumbai. This is where it gets interesting. Your home city, Shruti.
Yes.
2019, we had an election, didn't we?
Yes.
Did the BJP win?
No.
They didn't win. So when the charges first surfaced, there was a BJP government, not only in Delhi, in the central government, but also in Mumbai. 2019, different party got in. Who got in?
It was the Shiv Sena.
Shiv Sena party got in. Their former allies, now enemies. And so suddenly, Arnab Goswami, who had friends in Delhi and Mumbai, has friends in Delhi, but not in Mumbai. So he was arrested by the Mumbai police. This is Shekhar Gupta again, the balanced journalist, explaining how this change in power in Mumbai was critical to his arrest earlier this month.
This became a kind of open warfare between Shiv Sena and the BJP. And so somebody, a big shot, or a prominent face in the media who might have been the darling of the establishment earlier, was now no longer the darling of the establishment in the state. Still the darling of the establishment at the center, but no longer darling of the establishment in the state, because the establishment in the state had changed.
It had changed. So, just to sum up, he's out now. He was arrested on the 4th of November. He was released last night. The Mumbai police and the Mumbai authorities were the ones that arrested him, and their court said you've got to stay in jail. But the Supreme Court intervened. The Supreme Court is based
in Delhi,
where his power base is, and they said you can go free. This one it's not over yet.
No.
That's my pick of the international papers.
Well, having a look around the world, Shroots, you've been looking at how different countries are localising the US elections.
Yes, it's really cool. Some of the headlines that have been coming out, you know, we've seen how a small Irish town has claimed Joe Biden's victory because, you know, they found some Irish roots. And just how we had Kamala Harris with India, you know, we found Joe Biden's Irish roots. Then there's also a noodle place that Joe Biden visited in Beijing back in 2011. And now people are flocking to it ever since the news broke that he will be the next president. But people are going there because they were like, Joe Biden's eaten there. Another place is Japan. There is a Joe Biden in Japan who's becoming famous overnight because he shares his name with Joe Biden, with different spelling, more Japanese. But my most favorite headline that came out a couple of days ago is how a newspaper in Scotland has localized Donald Trump's result that he hasn't.
Does it involve a golf course?
Yes, it does. It says, South Ayrshire's golf club owner loses 2020 presidential election.
Very good.
Which I think just wins all the localised news because that's the way to do it.
It reminds me, I bet you had this lesson in journalism. We all study journalism actually in the UK. And the classic one they teach you is, it's good to localise news, but don't go too far. Mm. Headline in Scotland in 1918, Aberdeen man drowns in boating accident. It was the Titanic sinking. Yes. Localising is good, but don't go too far.
Yeah, hyper-local. Do you remember when there was a thing about whether or not Sherry Blair was related to The Edge from U2?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Question for you. Somebody sent me a little text message yesterday, or a little video yesterday, entitled The Largest Fast Food Restaurant Chains in the World. Basically charted it from 1975 all the way up to November of this year. What would you say? In terms of the number of locations in the world, is top of the list right here, right now, when it comes to fast food restaurants?
Golden Arches by a mile.
It has to be. Maybe the chicken people are sneaking up behind them, but it's going to be Mickey D's, isn't it? Or McJoe's, as it's now known in the US, since McDonald's will be doing something else from now on.
I thought exactly the same, and it's the wrong answer.
Burger King?
Is the wrong answer. Burger King coming
Donut
in at fifth.
People?
No, they're nowhere near. They're down in eighth.
Does Starbucks count?
Starbucks number three.
Okay, the people that do not Takado. Who are the other ones? Chipotle.
That they're not on
Eat
there.
And drink.
They're down in 3,943rd place. I know it's a really strange one. I thought exactly the same. Okay, 7-Eleven not there. No. So what you got? Pizza Hut at 6, Burger King at 5. KFC at 4, Starbucks at 3, McDonald's at 2. Subway.
Hmm.
Subway, in terms of number of locations around the world, far outstrips McDonald's. Yeah, you're right. McDonald's making $20.8 billion this year so far. And we'll get on to McDonald's investor conference figures shortly. But Subway making $10.4 billion in the same year. But they've got 42,600 locations worldwide, Subway, to McDonald's 38,695. So there's a little fact for you to entertain your dinner guests, lunch guests or virtual guests over the weekend.
Virtual guests. Well, forget your real estate results, Richard. I don't care what the real estate companies are doing. I don't care what some random yogurt manufacturer has been up to in Q3. The results that we have been waiting for, and they are in. Tom Urquhart has been on the investor call for McDonald's.
And I'm just... Yeah. The Subway thing was just an anomaly. I was throwing that one in as a bit of a red herring on this one. And there are no red herrings currently on the McDonald's menu. But there are some new things on the McDonald's menu. Why are we talking McDonald's? Because, look, they are a significant business the world over with a huge influence. And they've had their McDonald's investor conference this week. Started Monday, wrapped up yesterday, virtual, of course, with a lot of people tuning in to see what Ian Borden, the new president of McDonald's International, had to say. And there was lots going on. Interesting quotes coming out of them. The biggest one that I think struck a chord for me was this. The demand for the familiar in these uncertain times is more important than ever. That was a quote from Borden and the rest of the McDonald's board, basically saying to their investors that what we're going to do here is we're going to go back to basics. We are going to focus on our core. We are going to up the impact on our big items like your Big Macs, your Quarter Pounders, your chicken nuggets. We're going to do more chicken dishes as well, because that lot of Chick-fil-A and lot whatever are nicking all our business. But they're also adding some new bits and pieces. So a new loyalty program comes in, My McDonald's. For all those.
I drove past the billboard. This has hit the UAE. There's a billboard on Sheikh Zayed Road. I drove past it 2 days ago. Loyalty points. I thought, not sure how I feel about that. I mean, it's one thing to walk into Boots, isn't it? Other chemists available. And for them to be like, have you got a loyalty card? And you say, yeah, or you say no. To go into McDonald's and for them to, congratulations, you've made platinum. Would you like some extra fries?
Nothing wrong with that. Who doesn't like an extra burger just thrown in for the prize? You know, this one's on us.
Congratulations, Tom. You're our biggest customer this week.
So you've got that. That's the My McDonald's. That's coming into effect. They've got easier ordering, so they're bringing in a new app as well to make that a lot easier. They're trialling a load of new drive-thrus as well. So basically dedicated drive-thrus. So restaurants that you can't sit in, all you have is wider lanes, if you like, for those that have ordered in advance. So if you've ordered on your
app, those who've got platinum cards, those
who've got platinum cards, those that have had the vaccine, they can go straight through, no problem at all. Do not pass go, do not collect 200, just get your Big Mac, all right, and then do one. So you've got that coming in as well. So they're looking at sort of revolutionising the drive-through, or making it an easier drive-through, as they're calling it. Easier ordering, new packaging, retro packaging coming in. This one's been prompted by the fact that a lot more people are eating at home and getting delivery as well. So you don't need the packaging that you're getting in-store. You want more retro packaging back at home. So that's what's coming in. The demand for the familiar, going back to basics, going back to chicken dishes, etc. And the big one as well, McPlant. The McPlant has been released. It's the first ever plant-based burger for McDonald's. It's in association with Beyond Meat, which is just going to see their stock price go through the roof as well. That has been launched, and it has become the subject of much hilarity online as well, with everybody chiming in on social media about the new McPlant. Not everyone's convinced, especially stateside and other parts of the world. McPlant Place is being trialled in Canada. It's now being rolled out in the US, and they're going to go global with it in the coming weeks and months as well. But a lot of people are chiming in with what they think it should be. Basically, they're just saying McPlant, bit lazy, isn't it? You know, it's a bit in keeping with the McDonald's, you know, in terms of, what we're going to do. Let's put fish in a burger. What should we do then? Okay, let's call it a fillet of fish. When you could have called it the quarter flounder, as somebody online has called it. A lot of other suggestions coming through for the McPlant alternatives. The Big Unmac, the McNotter Burger, the Planty McPlant Face, amongst others. But apparently this is not the first one. Ray Kroc, 1960s, he released the Hula Burger in the 1960s. The reasons he did this is because Catholics couldn't eat meat on Friday, or can't eat meat on Friday in theory. So he had an alternative called the Hula Burger, which was, and I can't understand why they still haven't got this on the menu, a bun, cheese and a slice of pineapple.
Good O.
Hula being a Hawaiian reference to hula dancing.
Exactly that. And of course, because the Hawaiian is pineapple with everything, isn't it?
Mm.
You get the Hawaiian burger, the Hawaiian pizza and everything like that.
I have the Christmas menu for McDonald's in front of me, just in case you were wondering where you were going to spend the festive season, if you are looking for something to do on December the 24th. Two things have caught my attention. One is the Double Big Mac, which has four patties. So if you think the Big Mac is two patties, it is four patties. Two patties, bun, two patties, bun, two patties, top. How many calories do we reckon the Double Big Mac comes in at?
Oh, it's got to be 600, isn't it?
I'm going to go 780.
Now, Richard clearly counts his calories a little bit closer than Tom. 730. Well done, Richard Dean. The other thing, though, and this I'm here for this. You know how when you get a McFlurry, you have to chew, and it's the whippy ice creamy whatever stuff, and then you choose what's mixed into it. Might be a flake, might be some crushed Maltesers, might be some Oreos, but you have to pick, am I Oreos or am I flake? Not for Christmas. They are taking celebrations You know, the box of small, tiny chocolate bars that are wrapped individually mm-hmm. that people give each other to say thank you for things, mm-hmm. hence the celebrations. And you can have all of it. So the Christmas Celebrations McFlurry includes ground-up bits of Mars bars, Twix biscuits, caramel swirls, Galaxy chocolate drops, and Maltesers.
All in one.
No choosing required.
Okay.
I do not have the calorie count for aforementioned Celebration Christmas McFlurry.
What's not to like about that, hey?
Mm.
Are they doing something right? 9% increase in the stock price this year. They're now currently valued at $167 billion worldwide.
I've got a list. I did a quick search for the Hula Burger. I've got a list of the top five McDonald's failures. The Hula Burger comes in at number five. Number four, the McPizza.
Oh,
introduced in the late 80s and early 90s, along with the McLasagna and McSpaghetti.
No!
In a bun or just standalone?
No, standalone. There was something called the Arch Deluxe, which I don't remember. It was supposed to appeal to adult tastes with a secret mustard mayonnaise sauce. Didn't go down well. Number two was the McLean Deluxe. This was to appease critics who said that there were too many calories in the burger.
Was that just lettuce in a bun?
It advertised the burger as 91% fat-free, 10 grams of fat compared to the Big Mac's 26 grams of fat. The secret was in the seaweed. To make the burger so low-fat, the company replaced the fat content with water. The recipe called for a seaweed extract to bind the water to the beef.
What were they thinking?
Yeah. Despite the addition of so-called natural beef flavour additives, the result was a dry failure of a burger that was later called, you'd like this one, Tom, the McFlopper.
That's not true.
But they're clearly doing something right because they're worth 18 squillion.
Yeah, $167 billion, as you say, doing something right at the moment. McRib, apparently McRib's back as well, isn't it? By popular demand, I'm not sure. It's changing on the time.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.